This is a replay of the Tuesday night, November 28th WGN show. We started at 11. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, and unless sports preempt us, that's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593, my toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. You got 2 hours to spend together. Plenty to talk about, but whatever's on your mind will trump mine, providing it has absolutely no import whatsoever. Yes, guilty pleasures. This is your poll. You asked for it. I've done it before. It usually doesn't attract the attention of the world's worst hit records, but you never know. We've already had some votes. Now, you know the guilty pleasure. Those are the hit songs, and they got to be hits, that you absolutely love, but you're absolutely embarrassed to admit you even like them. So, well, if you hear one that somebody else mentions that you say, yeah, I like that too, well, by all means, vote for it, because it is a cumulative total, and we'll reveal them probably on Christmas night. Yeah, there's a present for you. So that's the deal on guilty pleasures. Now, the other thing is the Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club. I've got an email from several people who say they're on board, they're members. The deal is I don't hate the holidays. I actually am completely ambivalent. I don't know that I care either way. But for many people, the forced frivolity of ho, ho, ho turns into ho, ho, hum, or worse really quickly. And so this is your safe haven. So meetings are held weeknights, normally from 10 to 1 Central, sports interruptions notwithstanding. Now, speaking of which, next Tuesday and next Thursday, we will be on an hour late due to the Blackhawks hockey. But other than that, it will be a full show, including next Monday night trivia, where we will pick up with the stragglers that we had last week. Usually I won't hold them over 2 weeks, but since we didn't really have a show last night, I figure we will. So that's the deal there. Now, as I say, maybe tonight we'll get more into D.B. Cooper. CooperCon happened. Yes, it did. And some interesting, maybe new information came out there. But in the meantime, James is in Oregon. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, good evening. How are you doing?
All right. How about yourself?
Oh, not too bad. I ain't got nothing to complain about tonight. So
good.
I just, I'm always really interested anymore about all this medical stuff. And
sure.
I have a daughter that lives in Orlando that's in real estate, and she does property management. And a young lady, she rented an apartment to. She's 35, a single mom. Wednesday, had a triple transplant in Orlando. They had called. She moved in down there about 4 months ago, mm-hmm. and she was a type 1 diabetic on dialysis, and I don't know why the liver, but they did a pancreatic transplant. They did a kidney transplant. She's so far off of insulin, dialysis, and she's the girl says she went to bed sick and woke up feeling good.
That's great. That's absolutely great. They've been doing this for a while, particularly the combined liver pancreas. In fact, I saw some studies a few years ago of 14-year follow-ups where what was great news is the people were alive to be followed up. So Yeah, there's a number of things that we never would have thought could be done that that are being done, and that's terrific. It's no walk in the park, that's for sure, but it sure beats the alternative when you're in need.
Yeah, well, I was surprised. I didn't know that they could do the pancreas, but I was surprised to hear that. But I know the liver, they did. I think they do partials on those, don't they?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. But normally, pancreatic transfers usually occur with kidneys, and it usually is end-stage renal, you know, from diabetes. So that's actually, I'd say for the last 20 years or so, been going on. So at least it's not something where anybody who's looking forward, if you will, to this, it's not novel, which is good, because the doctors have a certain amount of operation and history with it. Now, in some cases, everything comes from the same donor. Now, not always.
Yeah.
Of course, with kidneys, it can be a living donor, obviously. And you know, so sure, there's so much that they've done on this stuff, and almost always it's type 1 diabetes and kidney failure which makes you a candidate for this.
Yeah. Well, I was just surprised. She went in about, I think my daughter said about 4 weeks ago in a hospital. She was in a hospital because she had an infection, so they bypassed her. She was up for a transplant, and then they put her down down the list, you know, like the top of the list. So she was like number one or number two, and then they called her up again, but pretty quick. But I don't know what's involved with all that. I thought it had to be the same blood types and all that.
Oh, it absolutely. It has to be a match. There's no doubt about it. But the reason for that, by the way, is that when you're type 1 diabetic and you've blown out your kidneys, if you get transplanted kidneys, the chances are you're going to do it again. And so, and again, and again. And so that's the idea of the kidney pancreas transplant. But to tell you how long they've been doing this, the first one was 1966.
Wow.
And I think there's probably, at this point, close to 1,000 a year done in America.
Yeah.
So it's again, something that's not without a track record, and that's good news.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, well, I just want to let people know that, hear that, but...
Oh, yeah.
About this young lady, yeah.
We have a lot more options. Now, obviously, there are times when, you know, when you're just not a candidate for this, you know, clearly. But assuming that you are a candidate, like I say, there's a track record, and the survival rate after a year is about 95%. So it's...
pretty good.
Yes, it's very good. Well, again, considering the shape that someone is in who needs this operation, it's amazingly good. So... you know, of course, you're stuck on the anti-rejection medicines and all the things that come with transplantation. But again, if you're in that shape, it's a godsend.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm still waiting to hear more about the transplant of the pig kidney into a human, because they did that.
Yes.
And I mean, well, I haven't heard any more about it, but the last time I heard about it, they said it was still working. But, of course, it was in a... basically a brain dead person, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Who's going to volunteer for that, of course. You know, porcine pigs are about as close to us as you can get. And that's why insulin, for instance, traditionally all porcine. You know, it makes sense. But you and I wouldn't volunteer for this, but good that they're trying.
Not yet.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then considering, my God, what they've done to pig feed and everything else over the years, you know, get the dreaded Monsanto in the mix, on and on and on. I think I'd want to know more about the pig first.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's wonderful times. You know, there are so many downsides to allopathic medicine, to say the least, but there are also so many upsides. And when someone is literally out of options, it's great when options appear.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I mean, we've got doctors that have American doctors that go into the islands and stuff that are outside the U.S. territory and have clinics down there to do things that that they won't allow here, you know.
Well, interesting. Of course, there's always a workaround, and then you start to get into the role of the FDA, and boy, I'm not going to go there. That would change this show overnight. But we'll just leave that right alone.
I'll call the medical doctor.
Right, so, yeah. Right. Yeah, that or any political talk show, they've got a view. Trust me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, interesting stuff.
Okay. Well, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving and.
It was spent right here, counting down the world's worst hit records.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I'll do that other one. What's the ones you're going to have, the ones you're embarrassed to say
well,
you like?
Well, that's right. Absolutely. And we've already gotten some votes. And, you know, it's interesting because very often those are the ones that also appear on the world's worst hit records list. But, yeah.
Well, how about
go for it.
How about Afternoon Delight?
You like that, the Starland Vocal Band. All right. Well, that is a brave admission. Yeah, Bill and Taffy Danoff. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, there you are. We knew we'd find you sometime. Good deal. Afternoon Delight. All right. That's the spirit. Thank you.
Okay, good night.
Appreciate
I'll talk to you.
Yeah, thanks. That's perfect. If you too love Afternoon Delight, oh my God. That's the beauty of this, because for every one of your guilty pleasures, there's somebody saying, oh my God. But as long as they're hits, that means there's a lot of people who thought like you did, or they wouldn't have been hit. So, we've had multiple votes for The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Yeah, people stepping up to admit that. And Seasons in the Sun and Starland Vocal Band. All right, you're on a great start on this. So 888-876-5593 would be 8888 Raleigh right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Laverne Baker, a very young Laverne Baker, 1954 on Atlantic. And of course, a couple minutes after she put it out, here comes Georgia Gibbs, Miss Nibbs, doing the Lily White cover. But that's the original Laverne Baker from 54, and that was Julie in Georgia who had requested that. Happy to do that for Julie. All right, so we're talking about the songs you're embarrassed to admit that you like. Well, Scott in Louisville, Illinois, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. I got a couple songs for you. I like Love Shack by the B-52s.
Oh, okay. Very good.
And I hate to say this, but Country Roads, Take Me Home, John Denver.
Oh,
I sing that song every time it comes on.
Oh, my God. All right. Yeah, you're right. That is a true confession. No doubt about it. Take Me Home, Country Roads. All right. Good choices.
Right. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. So, yeah, that's the Hall of Shame. That's for sure. That's a spirit. So, John in Covington, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. I have five of them. And number one, and I know it's not your cup of tea, but if you just listen to the lyrics, A Kind of a Hush by Herman's Hermits.
All right.
Number two is Kermit singing Rainbow Connection.
Is that a hit?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, that's frightening. Okay.
And number three is an old-fashioned love song by Three Dog Night.
Really?
And I'll tell you, Paul Williams wrote Rainbow Connection and old-fashioned love song.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen him interviewed one time, and he said, I took old-fashioned love song to Richard Carpenter, and he said it wasn't their cup of tea, or something to that effect. And I took it to Three Dog Night, and it became a smash.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, everybody's got those stories of the songs that they turned down, unfortunately. So there's no shortage of that.
Number four is The Wedding Song by No Paul Stuckey.
Oh, God. Okay.
Number five is... This really started, this really kind of grew me up, you know, because we Kent State, and I got into, I don't know, I was like 12, and I was like into Vietnam and Donovan, Atlantis.
Oh, God. All right. Yes.
It kind of grew me up, and my dad said, well, no, he's going to start smoking pot.
That's interesting. It grew you up. I think it threw me up. But
is that right?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's
perfect.
Fine.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
And that's the spirit. And, of course, if somebody mentions one that you secretly love, but you otherwise are embarrassed to admit it, well, I want to hear it. 888-876-5593-8888 Raleigh. All right, been meaning to talk about CooperCon, and you're probably aware the legend of D.B. Cooper, only it's not a legend because D.B. Cooper was a real man who existed. And, you know, a lot of people are wondering, what is it that over 50 years later, people are still fascinated by that? And a number of people have said things like, well, it's not like Bigfoot, Sasquatch, anything like that, because D.B. Cooper actually lived. Well, that's true. But the other thing is that he was something right out of a mid-60s movie. You know, you could almost see Frank Sinatra in this, you know. So here he is. He goes into the airport and has his cigarette and his scotch and soda or whatever it is and all that. And he saunters onto the plane in his business suit with his cash. And here's this guy, Joe Average, walking to the airport in the black business suit and, you know, calmly having that drink and smoking that cigarette, then jumping out of the plane, never to be seen again. And so that's that clearly is something of a bygone era, to say the least. And you know, interesting, the passengers weren't even aware that it was going on. So we'll pick it up right there. We'll leave you right at the airport wondering what happened to Flight 305 Northwest Orient. And in moments, you'll hear the rest of it, maybe. 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
Look about, look about, look about, ooh, wee. Look about, look about, look about, ooh, wee. Ooh, ah, ooh, ah, ooh, wee. Well, she's so fine, fine, fine. She's so fine, fine. She's so fine, and she's so fine, fine, fine. She's really sweet. Head to toe, I want the world to know. I love her, love her so. She's alright. She's alright. She's alright. She loves me above the day at night.
Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That, of course, Jackie Wilson. That was his first solo effort after leaving the Dominoes. And Reet Petit came from Louis Jordan's Reet Petit and what was that? It was a jazz record. Reet Petit and Gone, yeah, from 1948. And that was a Berry Gordy composition, along with his sister Gwen and Tyran Carlo, which was the pseudonym for Billy Rockell Davis. And what that record did was it allowed Berry Gordy to get the funding he would need. There were other ways that he got the money, but ultimately having success for that helped him secure the money to start what became Motown. And Berry Gordy turns 94 today. Yeah, so hard to believe, still with us. Happy birthday to Berry Gordy. All right, so 888-876-5593. 888-8888-Raleigh. We'll leave D.B. Cooper there. I'll finish this night no matter what. All right? I was going to. Because it was an interesting CooperCon this year, because one of the guys who showed up was one of the copycats. Oh, yeah. After D.B. Cooper ostensibly got away with it, you know, no body found, and everybody thought, well, the FBI didn't think, but everybody else thought he got away clean, other people decided they'd try it. Yeah, one of them, Martin McNally. I think he did about 38 years in prison, but he was at this year's CooperCon, so we'll talk about that too. But in the meantime, John is in St. Paul. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. I'm just going to jog your memory about your time that you might have spent in Chattanooga. Did you ever live there?
I did live there.
What years?
Much later. I lived there when they became the gig city, when they offered synchronous broadband at a gig up and a gig down for $250 a month. I said, I'm moving. So I did. So that would have been about 2011, 2012.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Okay.
But I mean, I know the area. And of course, I lived in Nashville decades earlier. And so what are we talking about?
Do you know any of the history of Chattanooga radio by any chance, like WMOC?
Oh, early top 40. Ron Brandon worked there, among others.
Okay.
Yeah, 1450. They were the good guys. They were Tiger Radio. They were a bunch of things. But yes, and they competed with FLI for a while. I don't think that GOW had gone top 40 then at that time.
I did catch a little clip of YouTube where they just did a air check and about maybe 5 minutes or maybe 3 minutes, 5 minutes worth of air check on it. And there was a guy who worked there by the name of Elliot Dubrow.
Okay,
and that
absolutely
probably doesn't ring a bell with you, right?
No, actually, the lineup was pretty well known. He worked there, and so did Jack Diamond and Pat O'Day, not the same one from Seattle. And yeah, then that they had a Bobby Dark there, who was Bobby Box on another station. And absolutely. And like I say, Ron Brandon worked there. Dave Randall. In fact, Dave Randall actually was Cleveland Wheeler, who real claim to fame was in Tampa, but poor Cleveland had more than a few names. He was Paxton Quigley on WQAM, but he was Dave Randall there.
Paxton Quigley, wasn't she like a gun person or something?
No, I think they got it from a movie, but that's what they named the poor guy when he came to QAM. But in any event, in any event,
no,
MOC.
Elliot Norman, I call him the mysterious Elliot Norman Dubrow because his life seems a mystery and his death seemed a mystery. He died at the age of 26 in an automobile accident in Chattanooga.
Right.
And Chester Martin was a Tennessee historian, and he seems to be the only one who I've been able to glean some information. He's passed away, Chester Martin, but there was some stuff there.
Is David Carroll still alive?
I don't know.
Okay, he was the Chattanooga radio and TV guy in the newspaper, and he would know.
David Carroll would know, maybe. Okay,
yes,
that's
interesting. If he's still with us, and I'm not 100% sure, but
I wonder if you could get a hold of him.
Oh, I don't even call the people back. I've been meaning to call back for 5 years. You got the wrong person.
Okay.
But you should have no problem if you're trying to. And you know, at the time that MOC was top 40, their big competitor at first was DXB. And then I guess the Dick brothers had bought it, the 1450, and renamed MOC, and that was in honor of some local football or whatever. But anyway, that was the deal.
Well, Elliot Dubrow, I listened to the air check, Raleigh, and are you familiar with the radio term puker?
Yeah, sure. Half the jocks on the air.
Right. So if you listen to that air check and you go, whoa, wow, that guy's a puker, you know, Urban Dictionary says, you know, a certain way of talking, you know, like a sales guy, you know, all that. I thought I get a kick out of that. But he died under, I don't know, there's a conflicting thing. There's a guy in Tennessee who, in Nashville, who he likes to say that he knew Elliot Dubrow, and I doubt that he did. And, because it just doesn't jive. with the research that I've done.
Well, there's a, but, you probably saw this then if you've been looking at things. There's a story, someone said this is a true story of my cousin, Elliot Dubrow, who lived in Chattanooga. Did you read that article?
I did. In fact, I was the one who responded to him by correcting the spelling of Elliot Dubrow's name, which, again, is
hard.
He supposedly knows him so well. He pretends he's
not,
his cousin.
Not knows him so well, claims he's a cousin. You'd think if he's a cousin that he'd spell the name right.
Right. Well, and I've called this guy out because he's like this, and I know you're not a TV person, but he's like that Andy Devine character in that Twilight Zone episode who's telling whoppers to the townsfolk, and he embellishes everything about himself to try to impress people. It's almost a joke, you know? So I kind of called him out on that, but he's a guy from Tennessee, though. He used to, you know a guy named Ray White who used to work at a Nashville TV station?
No. When was he there?
70s.
No.
Probably,
no.
Mostly 70s, probably.
No.
He kind of, so I don't know. He makes references to some of those, but...
I thought that car accident, I think, was like summer of 66, and it was in Georgia
August
somewhere.
August 10th of 66.
All right, in Georgia, right?
I read that it was in, according to Chester Martin, it was in Chattanooga. He was like changing lanes or something, and there was like a semi that maybe clipped him, something like that. But it still is mysterious. I mean, if you die in Chattanooga, Tennessee in 1966, I mean, that's pretty much witness protection. You know, who knows what happened?
I think he died in Dalton, Georgia, but I could be wrong.
That would make sense because the braggart who pretends to know him and all that, he says that he went down, drove down to Atlanta.
Yeah.
And saw Sandy Koufax pitch for the Dodgers against the Atlanta Braves. It was their first year in Atlanta.
Okay.
And he goes down and sees Koufax pitch and then is coming back from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's what it was. Maybe he died in Dalton, Georgia, coming back from Atlanta, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, well, that's that, you know, I mean, God knows I didn't know him. I knew who he was, but that's what I had heard, was that he died in a car crash in Dalton, you know, the carpet capital of the world. But
you know,
believe me, I didn't know this guy. So talk about not having firsthand knowledge. I, you know, obviously I know who he is the same way anybody who listens to the radio knows who he is, but not more than that.
Well, it's one of those things that just gets lost in history. And I mean, if he was from New York or something, but you know, these people who died in these car crashes, I mean, they don't seem to know a whole lot about a lot of this stuff. That Jack Quinlan, who used to be a Chicago Cubs announcer. I tried to get information about his automobile death in 1965. I was able to glean some information there. It said he had rented a car, and he was going to go golfing with somebody, his partner, Miss Lou Boudreau, used to be a great baseball player, used to broadcast with him. He had taken off by himself because, you know, Boudreau was late or whatever. He rents a car, and then they document that there was skid marks for a long. So it may have been a car that had defective brakes on it, and that may have killed him.
Mm.
But it's interesting because, I don't know, they don't have historically a lot of information that's easy to find on these things. And I think that you would think that they would be easier to find nowadays.
No,
we
because
have so much information that
everything
is broken down scientifically now.
Right, but the thing is that very few places have gone back into their archives and put them online for, you know, when you're talking about the 60s or the 70s. You know, if it happened since 1996, yeah, it'll be online, no doubt about it. But before that, it's somewhat hit and miss.
Now, what do you know about Bob Arbogast?
Oh, Arbo? Well,
yeah.
Well, I, yeah, all right. Well, I worked at KMPC, so I know Bob Arbogast. Stanley Ralph Ross and Bob Arbogast did that wonderful Chaos parody on Liberty Records in 1959, which was just hilarious. But yeah, Bob, what do you want to know? I mean, his family's still around, and I'm sure...
The reason why I ask is I was watching a 1960s episode of To Tell the Truth, and they had Tom Poston on there,
right. And
he made a reference to his buddy Bob Arbogast,
yeah,
to leave him some jokes before. And then I looked up on Poston's Wikipedia that he had worked briefly in radio, maybe in the 40s with Arbogast. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. Arbo was around. He worked at MAQ in Chicago, but that would have been the early 50s. And then he had gone to L.A. He was he actually worked at a little station in Evanston for a while, and then
did you like him? Like listening?
Yeah. I really like Stanley Ralph Ross a lot, and he and Arbo.
Now he worked on Batman, didn't he?
He did. He wrote that. He was one of the writers for that, not the only one, of course, but he did.
Right.
He did a number of things.
No.
And he did some on-screen stuff.
Have you ever heard of Ian Punnett?
Well, of course, because he used to be Art Bell's weekend guy.
Right. Okay, so good. Yeah, you know that.
I
was. He used to work in the Twin Cities here.
Yes, absolutely.
Him and
did.
His wife Marjorie.
Yes, of course.
And I used to see them. I used to see them on the streets all the time, and I saw him at. He was at a Starbucks in my neighborhood, and there's a big gust of wind. He's under this little one of these outside little canopies. The canopy blows over, and I go over there, and I see, I noticed it's Ian there, because I knew what he looked like. Okay, and so I help him out, because this thing blew over right where he's having coffee, whatever. And then I struck up a conversation with him for about a half an hour on radio. He gave me some inside stories. But he was my favorite of these rotating hosts, because you had, like, George Knapp, right?
Right.
And you had
later.
You had
well, of course, later was George Knapp. That was more in the, I forget the idiot's name who's on now. But it was after Art was not doing it.
Right. Oh, are you talking about
Norrie,
George Norrie?
George Norrie, yeah. Oh, God. Yes. So
okay. George Norrie actually worked in the Twin Cities at
one time. I know.
I know.
Yeah. I know.
But what don't you know?
Well, I mean, those things are easy. Well, you know, I was Art Bell's designated replacement in 1999 when he was leaving the first time, and I fled out of there. I mean, literally fled in March of 2020, and then as a favor to a friend, I did in the summer. I did some weekends in 2007, and what I can tell you is, when I was doing it the first time, man, that was great, because you just open the mic and you have every call in the world. When I was doing it the second time, I couldn't get arrested. I mean, that's how badly that show had disintegrated as far as listener reaction.
Arbo, he was a tough act to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. I hate to say this, but John says if I don't play commercials, they'll flog me. So call me again soon.
I will do that, Robert.
All right,
thanks.
Appreciate it. All right.
Bye-bye.
So in lieu of being flogged, this is WGN Radio. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Got a minute and a half left this hour, and I don't want to waste it on a bumper, but we'll play it next hour, no doubt. Diane in Chicago has a song question, so go for it, Diane.
Oh, hi. It wouldn't be, I guess, a guilty pleasure, because I wouldn't be, like, ashamed to say... But the Bubbles in the Line, which is the theme song for Lawrence Welk, and
the only Lawrence Welk record that was a hit on any popular radio station was
Calcutta or whatever.
Yes, exactly. So you can vote for that, but you can't vote for any champagne music.
Oh, okay. Well, that was the theme song.
Yeah, but it wasn't a hit.
Okay, and,
a hit.
It wasn't. Okay, can I ask you one question? I just finished a Walter Winchell biography, and in there it quotes him as saying, talking about Roberta Sherwood.
Mm-hmm.
And Roberta Sherwood, he said he found her in a cafe in Miami Beach. She was singing love songs, torch songs, and he names three songs there.
Mm-hmm.
The first two are very familiar, but the last one is odd. So here's what he says, and he says, and so many other greats. Now, I don't consider this last song a great. So he names You're Nobody Till Somebody Loves You, Cry Me a River, and Take Your Shoes Off, Baby, and Start Running Through My Mind.
Okay. Hang on
a
minute.
Hang on a minute.
Stay
great.
Right where you are. Don't go away. Okay. All right. We'll leave Roberta and her shoes. And she was on Joey Bishop for a while as well. All right. All that and more coming up on WGN Radio.
Let us wander down. And if you feel inclined, take your shoes off, baby. Take your shoes off, baby. And start running through my mind. Let us fly away to that rock candy mountain. the bluebirds sing by the champagne springs. We'll kiss the blues goodbye. And after we've reached the end of the world, we'll stand on the edge of time. Honey, we'll sail away on an ocean of love, on rippling thrills that ride. Let me guide my love through the strangest places, shoes off, baby. Take your shoes off, baby.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Roberta Sherwood. Take your shoes off, baby. It's from her debut album, 1956, and this is a real fairy tale story. Diane asked about her, so we will talk a little about her. And she actually, by the time she was quote-unquote discovered, she was middle-aged. She was born about 1913 and had been in vaudeville from the time she was, you know, preteen. And they were, she and her sisters were doing an act. And along the way, she met a Broadway actor, Don Lanning, and they ultimately married. And in the 30s, they said, you know, screw this New York stuff. We're going to Miami. And back then, Miami, long before the big fancy hotels, had a number of little nightclubs on Miami Beach, and they had one, and it was within a restaurant. It lost its lease, so the next thing you know, they're operating a hotel lounge. But while they're doing this, Don gets lung cancer. And so that's the end of that. And Roberta keeps trying and trying, and nothing happens. So she goes to Las Vegas to visit a family friend. It was Gene Austin. And by the way, if that name doesn't sound familiar, he wrote Take Your Shoes Off, Baby. But anyway, it didn't work out. She was trying to advance her career in Las Vegas and nothing. So she goes back to Miami Beach, and she is just at, you know, this is like the mid-50s now, at the third tier of clubs, to say the least. And Red Buttons, who used to always come down to Miami Beach, became a fan. And he's the one who told Walter Winchell, said, you know, you got to see this. And she's this middle-aged woman in this dumpy place and all that stuff. And so Winchell gives her great reviews, and suddenly she's got a record contract with Decca. And that first album, Take Your Shoes Off, was on it. But in terms of Diane saying she'd never heard it, actually that was a hit in 1941 for Artie Shaw, and the vocalist on that was Hot Lips Page. But it was done a few times after that, and then Roberta did it in 56 on that album. It was not released as a single, but she suddenly became just huge. And this is the pop standards era, to say the least. This is not top 40, but a Billboard poll of disc jockeys had her like top 20 artist, and again, not top 40, but she was a torch singer. And she was, talk about girl unlikely. Again, she's older. She gets on stage. She's, I don't know who dressed her, but it was like, you know, a sweater and glasses and her accompaniment. She held a cymbal in her hand. And, oh God, you'd have to see it. In any event, people were obviously having a lot of fun, making fun of her. And the only thing she charted with was Lazy River, which was not a hit. It got to number 57 on the top 100. But she continued to sing, and she continued to make appearances. And what's really weird is some of these Decca 45s did well in jukeboxes. And I can't tell you why, but the jukebox, the coin-op guys just loved her because she got a lot of play. And she was on Ed Sullivan and Jackie Gleason and all of that. She was on Joey Bishop, you know, all the things you'd expect. And, she was doing nightclubs, I'd say, into the late 70s, in the Sid Charisse days and Anna Maria Alberghetti, a lot like that kind of stuff. And I think she did a little bit of television, but I couldn't tell you what, you know, a bit parts. I think she was maybe something small on The Courtship of Eddie's Father or something. And anyway, that was a deal. She had moved to Los Angeles, and she was performing into the early 1990s, and she died in 99. So that's the story, Diane. What else you want to know?
Oh, okay, thanks. Walter Winchell takes credit for himself because he says...
Well, he should. He should.
In his columns, he said records... Attention Records Networks and take the fastest plane train, go to Marie Franklin's place opposite the Roney Plaza. And he does, and then Copacabana landlord Jay Pradell booked her blind at $5,000 per week. But I remember her, you know, you got all these variety shows in our, in the 50s, in our living rooms, right? And you'd see her once in a while with her tambourine or whatever. But you definitely got the impression that she was sort of, it was a charitable thing. There was a sort of a sympathy angle, and so the word went around to boost her and things. So you got you knew it was, it wasn't like she was the greatest voice in the world. It's just that she was sort of a it was a charity thing a lot of ways. And, you know, how Hollywood and all the people
didn't stick together. I don't think it was charity. I don't think it was charity. Not saying that she was a big star or any of that, but she was a torch singer from another era. And so
Well, they ran a bar and grill.
I know. They
had
several.
Planning,
No, actually, she ran a few clubs, and that club you're talking across from the Roney Plaza, that was from 23rd to 21st Street in that whole little block there, the square block. There were things like Place Pigalle and, you know, the strippers and all that. Yeah, this was...
The restaurant that she ran, it went... She was making, she said, I got as low as $10 a night. She was running that bar and grill, and her husband, they went out of business.
Right,
he had the grave illness, so...
Yeah.
I don't mean to be nasty by saying a charity thing, but there was like a sympathy angle to it.
I don't think so.
Because you know how Hollywood gets
like that. It was more of a comedy than a sympathy. I think that she was just kind of a throwback to another era. It was with tongue-in-cheek to a certain amount, but believe me, it wasn't sympathy.
Oh, I thought more it was that than it would be a little bit of a comedy thing. Can I ask you this thing, too? What about, you know, when you talk about Paola? And maybe I'm not allowed to ask this.
You
wouldn't be able. But there's a certain talk radio show on WGN, and there's this promotions always. Where does Paola begin, and where does somebody promoting what they like, and they get benefits from the advertising?
Do you understand?
It's almost as if this person.
Do you understand what Paola is?
Well, it was in the Dick Clark era, the record business.
Do you understand what it is?
Well, paying money to play a record.
What makes that illegal? Okay.
Well, that's
like a
bribery
I'm going to tell you. Here is the deal. Back in the Dick Clark era, if you will, and he was as guilty as anyone ever possibly could be, but there was no FCC prohibition against the disc jockey taking money. However, the licensee could not take money. Then in 1961, they changed all the rules, and the bottom line was whether you were an employee or whether you were an owner, Paola meant that you played something for money and did not disclose it. It's perfectly fine if you disclose it. And so what you're talking about, and I don't know the host or the circumstance, but it seems like if you're aware of it, you know what was going on. The deal of Paola was the same thing with Plugola. You couldn't say...
Plugola is more like it.
Well, and that's how ABC almost hung in the Paola hearings and that whole mess because of the Dick Clark Saturday Night Beach Nut Show, because of the Plugola. They used to say that that guests' travel was provided by American Airlines or some airline. The problem was it wasn't. They just paid for the mention, and it wasn't listed as a paid mention, so that's Plugola. But let's say somebody wanted to give you $20 to, you know, to play Here I Stand by the Ripcords, all right? I'd want more than 20, but okay. As long as I get on the air and say this record is courtesy of, and you mentioned the label, in that case Columbia or whatever, then that's legal. That's perfectly legal. It's about disclosing that is illegal.
The scenario is if you have a show and you're saying, and you like some product, and then next thing you know, that becomes a sponsor where the advertisements are heard.
But you see, that's disclosed. You know that.
But it's also personally beneficial.
You can... It's
the likes...
It doesn't matter. You can endorse anything you want. For instance, I endorse the Sea Crane Company because I think Bob Crane should be knighted.
Do you get a free radio then?
I used to. I haven't gotten one in years.
Mean.
Sure.
That's what I'm getting at.
Of course. It's perfectly legal.
Okay. So it's legal. Okay.
I could also be, here's another thing. In this case, I'm not, because I do this out of the goodness of my heart. But when I was in radio for profit, you know, rather than doing this as a favor to a very dear friend, bottom line is absolutely endorsements. As long as I believed in the product, you absolutely could pay me to endorse it. Perfectly legal.
Okay.
Because it was law.
Remember Arthur Godfrey, too? He was, they used to say that he was so honest that anything he advertised, he really had to lose.
Arthur Godfrey was a fraud, and he was certainly, they found out about that in the long run.
Okay, but he was known for, he loved the product, or bought the, type of thing. That's what you're saying.
If you want to believe that act, believe it. But yes, there are many people who...
Connected with him from his hearing about it. I
wouldn't believe.
He seemed to be a nice enough person.
No, I wouldn't believe a word out of his mouth. Certainly, as long as it's disclosed, I don't care what it is. There's nothing illegal about it.
Okay. Another book I just read was about the Stork Club, that was intertwines with. That's why I read the Winchell book because. Anyway, the partnership with Billingsley, Sherman Billingsley, was Arthur Godfrey and I forgot the other third person, and they went into a thing where they made a perfume.
Yeah, well, Billingsley was...
So in other words, Arthur Godfrey was sort of in a lot of places you wouldn't expect, you know. I mean, as far as...
Well, he had a microphone. Of course he would be. But Billingsley was a bootlegger.
Not in the 30s, though.
Oh, don't kid yourself. Billingsley was a bootlegger, was the bottom line to
Right,
to
he
that.
Started out in Oklahoma with his brothers.
Okay, we're done.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. So, help! 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio.
I'm gonna make her mine, all mine. Hey, hey, baby, I wanna know if you'll be my girl.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James, and that, of course, is Bruce Chanel, Hey Baby, 1962 on Smash. And Bruce turns 83 today, and he's still with us, and he started on a Louisiana Hayride back in the day, and that was a big, big hit, and a good one it was, actually. 888-876-5593 is 8888. Raleigh. All right, so from Roberta Sherwood, where are we going next? Tom is in Chicago. What's up, Tom?
Good morning, Raleigh.
How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic, and congratulations on having the best radio show on in the history of broadcast radio.
Aren't you kind? So what's on your mind?
Absolutely great.
Tell me what's going on.
Well, driving home from the Blackhawks game, but I always listen to you when I'm in Chicago. I happen to live in Vegas now, but I come out here often.
Good.
Anyway, I don't know if you're in Chicago in the 1980s, early 90s, but there was a radio guy, DJ, named Mr. A or Alfred Hudgens.
Okay.
Who did an overnight show on, it was a classical station.
FMT.
That turned into the best R&B soul station around from like midnight to 6 a.m.
Is this FMT?
It might have been. There's some sound checks out there. Is Mr. A, in the alphabet, A,
yeah.
Hudgens.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, his opening theme was Soul Serenade by Oliver Sane.
Okay. All right.
And that song wailed.
All right. No, I can't. It can't be. Can't possibly be FMT. I don't know. I'd love to know.
It was. And here, it might not have been. It was a classical station. Yeah. It was an AM station. And with
oh, it was
one
AM.
Time,
it was yes. AM. Okay. Then it definitely wasn't FMT because that's yeah. FM.
Okay. The call letters will have.
Oh, I want to know.
Are lost in my memory banks. But at that time in my life, I was working a part-time job at United Parcel Service. And when I got off, the show would come on. And then in the morning, I would get up to go to my regular job, and the show would still be on. So, I got, both ends of the show. One morning, it was a snowy morning, and the crew that was coming in for the classical station, which was hosted by Jack Taylor from WGN, so they were late. So he played the classical music, but he would do the backfill, the titles of the song, and that was Johann Sebastian Bach in B minor, in a voice that you wouldn't expect on a classical radio show.
Right.
But it was absolutely, he played some of the best music there ever was.
Now I want to know. Now I'm just taken by this. I want to know. So I'm going to see what I can find out.
There's some sound, it's on SoundCloud, there's some sound checks with them. He would do a call and to this day I don't know if it was a goof or if it was real, but you could only, when people called in, only he would talk. It's like, you couldn't hear the caller saying whatever they said, but he would answer the question in a way that the audience kind of knew what they were asking.
Okay. And you're sure it's Alfred Huggins?
Hudgens. H-U-D-G-I-N-S.
H-U-D... Okay, this is better, because what it says on the screen is not that. H-U-D-G-I-N-S?
Yes, he's a Chicago kid.
Okay.
Born, I don't know,
right.
Born here. But.
All right, Alfred Hudgens. He was on WNIB.
All right.
And yes, he's reading the news on SoundCloud. Yes. All right, I found him. I'll talk about him. Thanks. I'll see if
keep
I can
keep up the good work.
Appreciate it. Call me again. Thanks. All right. So we found him. Well, that's a start. So now we got to find out more about him, and maybe we'll hear him coming up on WGN Radio.
They say that you're a runaround lover. Say it isn't so, but if you put me down for another, I'll know, believe me, I'll know, 'cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help but see if you are true to me. So remember, a thousand eyes. You say that you're at home when you phone me, and how much you really care. Though you keep telling me that you're lonely, I'll know if someone is there. 'Cause a night has a thousand eyes, and a thousand eyes can't help see if you are true to me. So remember when you tell those little white lies that the night has a thousand eyes.
WGN Radio, I'm Ronnie James, and yeah, that's one of my guilty pleasures. I absolutely adore Bobby V, but what it is I adore Snuff Garrett, world's best top 40 producer, as far as I'm concerned. The Night Has a Thousand Eyes, and actually, it was not only Snuff Garrett who worked on that, but Leon Russell as well, in fact, play a little another one that Leon had done. But meantime, That was on 1962 on Liberty. And Bobby V, on this night in 1963, was on stage at the Rockin' Thanksgiving in Pittsburgh at the Syria Mosque. It was Bobby V, the Jeanettes, Brian Hyland, Linda Scott, the Dixie Bells, Dale and Grace, Lou Christie, Paul and Paula, Little Eva, the Times, the Ronettes, Jimmy Clannon, the Dovells, and the Essex for $1.50. I know, those were the days, weren't they? All right, so I now have a new passion, which will be Alfred Hudgens. I want to hear the air checks. I'm not going to listen to them blind on the air with you. I will be happy to play them once I've heard them, but I want to know first. But reading more about this guy, I have a feeling he bought the Time. And it's interesting because of the funky commercials. Yeah, Brady's Lounge, Bo Diddley's Ribs, Sister Hayward. That's a reader and advisor who specializes in the removal of all evil influences, all of which, you can imagine didn't come on the standard station advertiser lineup. That's the deal, but the show sounds great, and I will find out more about him. So, yes, WNIB-FM, but also, on the weekends at least, WNDZ-AM. That was 750. So that's the deal, and I can't wait to hear him. And he was doing that, actually starting in 77 on NIB, and doing that until at least 2004, and when ill health claimed him. I can tell already I'm going to love him. I'm looking at a picture of him and just great control room. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, Don is in Beloit. What's going on, Don?
Hey, Raleigh. Can you repeat that guy's name again, the DJ?
Oh, sure, and that would be Alfred Hudgens, H-U-D-G-I-N-S, and he died in 2004, but from 77 to 2004, he was on WNIB-FM in overnights.
Yeah, I hope that you can do a whole show on him if it works out.
I'll have to see what I can find out about him. That's going to be the real... I'm pretty sure that he bought the Time. Like I say, when I gave you that lineup of advertisers, you know, they did not contract with the station for that. So he probably bought the Time and then sold it, which is perfectly fine. Those are some of the best shows ever. Reminds me, there's a guy in D.C. years ago, the More Better Man, and he did overnights on WOL, and it was just wonderful. And, you know, I'd hear his ads, and he'd say that my mama sells Avon product, but man, he had the best record collection ever. And so why not? I'll see what I can find out about him.
Huh. Well, I moved to Chicago in the late 80s, and I listened to BBM, which is really close to that 750 at 780. Mm-hmm. And I listened to that classical station at the time. I definitely remember this guy.
Okay. So, yeah.
As well, but that's a great story. That was really interesting.
Yeah, I want to find out more, and I will. All right. So, what are we talking about?
Well, you know, I could go with Secret Crush songs.
Okay, let's hear them.
Well, I'm just going to give you one. Like, you know, when the Beatles broke up, you know, it was horrible and everything. And, you know, most people that were like my age were just huge John Lennon. And I think over time, I just fell for McCartney, sorry. But I think, you know, it's going to maybe surprise, you know, McCartney people. But I like the Ram. Like, he focuses on his wife and him and his wife. He teaches his wife to be a piano player.
All right, forget all that. Just give me the song.
Well, I think pick anything on Ram. I think it's really cool. Most people don't listen to it.
Yeah, you got to pick a hit. So that means it's got to be a 45 and it's got to be a hit.
Well... Heart of the Country is a cute... I think Heart of the Country is really cute.
I don't think Heart of the Country is a 45 that was a hit, but I'll look for it.
All right.
Okay.
Well, I see you're looking for hits. I always forget
that. It has to be hits, and so obviously you're talking about Wings, and, you know, they did a lot of horrible records, and you could pick any one of them, but they got to be hits.
Uncle Albert.
Okay, there you go.
Admiral Halsey.
And you like that. All right, there you go. Perfect.
Well, that's it's Secret Crush, you know.
That's exactly it, and you're willing to publicly admit it. That's perfect. You're in the spirit of things. All right.
Tell us about Cooper.
All right, so let's see if we can. I do want to wrap that up because I've been kind of mentioning this for weeks now, ever since CooperCon. And like I say, one of the interesting things at CooperCon is Martin McNally showed up. And when I first saw the name, I thought, no. All right, Martin McNally was a guy who was about 28 years old in 1972, and he lost his job. And then here comes D.B. Cooper in the hijacking, and he says, "Ooh, that sounds like an easy score." So, yeah, boy, was he ever wrong. So in June of 72, he's got a submachine gun. He's hijacked a flight from St. Louis to Tulsa. He's got $500,000, and he jumps out of the plane. Now, firstly, he loses the money on the way down, of course. He's caught a few days later. He has $13 to his name. He's sentenced to two life sentences. He was released in 2010 after 38 years in prison. So he flew to Seattle for CooperCon this year, and he said it's a big mystery. A lot of people want to know. It's the evidence that doesn't even show up. You know, there's no evidence to say that he survived, no evidence to say he perished, and so he showed up for CooperCon. And what was interesting is a couple of years ago, the stewardess that he hijacked showed up to visit him too. So there's something about this. But the guy who puts CooperCon on is Eric Ullis, and this year had an interesting deal. You know, little things show up, like in 1980, some of the money showed up, and then this year. There was a white piece of cloth found right in the area where Cooper did hijack, and they looked at the piece of cloth and analyzed it. They knew it came from Kmart and all this. But what's interesting is that the analysis seems to tie it to many of the same things that were reported to be on the tie. Now, the tie is an interesting thing. It was a clip-on tie, which they did find. The FBI has it, and the FBI closed the case in 2016, but they refused to part with the tie. And so now Ullis is, in fact, suing for the right to get information on it, and who knows where that'll go. But over the years, there's been a number of people who have been kind of thought to be, yeah, this was him. But at this point, the question is, based on all the evidence and the particles on the tie that were mentioned, that it might have been an employee of Remcrew Industries in Pittsburgh. And there's one they were looking at in particular who died a few years ago, actually. But nonetheless, they also had more on the money found in 1980. And in fact, the kid who found the money volunteered several of his remaining bills to some of the sleuths in this. And so they're taking a look at what it was. And what was interesting is that the money didn't seem to be like professionally done, because some of it looked like it was rubber bands and other paper strapping. And so it's like, heck, could this be right? Well, Bill Grinnell was the Seafirst Bank employee who actually delivered the ransom money. And he was there, and he said, nope, it absolutely could have been, because many bank employees hurriedly assembled the packets of 20s, rubber bands and paper straps, and more was used. So the chaos of that, it fit that absolutely it could have been. So those were some of the things that were going on this year at CooperCon.
You know, Raleigh, I think that, you know, most people like come away with two thoughts, that, you know, this guy, it's just so easy to get a false identity back in the old days. You could say you're
well,
Dan.
Well, yeah, right. Never mind. And he did say he was Dan Cooper. Never mind how you get the ID. How do you jump out of the plane and your body is not found? You're never heard from again. What do you think? Do you think by now he's probably dead just because of age. But do you think he survived it?
Yeah, I jumped out of a plane. I've done parachuting, and of course those. And you know, wow, make sure you don't get sucked in the engine as you're jumping through the little doorway.
There's a number of things in that. So you know, because there's never been a body and there's never been any evidence. You know, the mystery goes on.
And then the rings, the watches. I don't believe he collected like all the loot that he could have. I don't know. Do you know anything about that? Like, he didn't get the watches or the rings or the diamonds.
He got the $200,000.
Yeah.
And that was good enough. But and we know that some of the money, about $6,000 from that, did show up near Tenabar, and the serial numbers match. So that money was from that, but it was a small amount. And that's what I was saying. The rubber bands were just rotted and all that. And, you know, that's why having the bank employee to say, yeah, some of it was rubber banded. So, yeah, we just don't know.
As a child of the 70s, I'm going to try to crack you up. But there was a great Columbo. Sorry. There was a great Columbo episode with Johnny Cash. And he jumped out of a plane to stage this perfect murder of his wife he's trying to chop off. And so he decides to make it look like he went down with the plane in a crash, but he actually parachutes and hides his parachute. It's sort of around the same time as a few years later, you know, with all these copycats. But it's kind of a cute plot.
Yep.
Of course, Columbo figures it all out.
Yep, the episode was Swan Song. It was 1974.
Many copycats.
Right. Absolutely. And the guy that I mentioned who was at KuberCon was not the only copycat who was trying this. There were several within the next year, actually. But I guess we'll never know. The reason, by the way, that white cloth that came from Kmart was interesting is that the stewardess on the flight at the time who was interacting with him mentioned that he had a white cloth that he had wrapped the money in before he put it on his body. So it's possible that that cloth that just showed up after all this time might be involved. Who knows? And if so, who put it there? Yeah. So,
Riley, you have a great show.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right.
We'll talk to you next time.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, happy to do that because I wanted to finally finish D.B. Cooper because I get emails. It's like, are you ever going to finish this story? Well, now you know. All right. And KuberCon, you know, every year. All right. So we'll get to Fran in Austin and James on the south side, Valerie in Warrensville, Stacy in Algonquin, and Andrew, we hope, in the waning moments. But if not, there's always tomorrow night, live show starting at 10 right here on WGN Radio. WGN Radio will forgo the bumper again. Plenty of time tomorrow night to play them all. But we have only about 7 minutes left this hour, so I want to get some more votes in here. And Fran is in Austin, so welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. Oh, yeah, I have. Well, I want to second a few of them. Well, I don't know if I want to, but I will.
Okay.
I'm embarrassed to admit, yes. I like Afternoon Delight.
No, okay. All right.
And let's see, there were some other ones I wanted to second. Now I can't think of what they were. I know we're kind of got short for time.
I can read you the current list from
okay,
from
okay,
today.
Yeah.
We have the Starland Vocal Band, which you mentioned, B-52's Love Shack, John Denver, Take Me Home, Country Roads, Herman's.
I like that one, too, and I like Love Shack.
You like Love Shack, I only get that, all right. Yeah, Herman's, Kind of a Hush.
Oh, Herman's, I'm Henry VIII.
You like that? All right.
Yes, second verse.
Same as the first. A little bit louder and a little bit worse.
A little bit worse.
Yeah, you should have said that. But anyway, yes. Let's see. Henry VIII.
So I guess that'll do it for this time. I've got more, but.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
well, keep them coming.
Waiting moments here, so.
Yeah. I love it.
All right. I don't think there's anything at all wrong with liking Alice in Wonderland. I love that song. I like Neil Sedaka anyway.
Yeah.
I can't think of too many songs that he did that I really, except Bad Blood, maybe.
Well,
the later
stuff, yes. He really should have remained, you know, let's have our early 60s stuff and good night. But, you know.
So. I like the remake that he did of...
Breaking Up is Hard to Do.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, that was a nice job on that. I agree. So, yes, absolutely.
Okay, well,
right.
I'll catch you on Monday.
I'm counting on it. Of course, we've got tomorrow and Thursday. I don't know what we're going to do.
Oh, that's right. What am I thinking? My days are all messed up.
Right, full shows. Yes, that's 6 hours worth of talk radio,
right.
So I can use you. All right, thanks. Appreciate
it. These holidays, they just mess with my mind.
God,
you know,
I guess.
Mess with my schedule. And
Yeah.
That's
all right.
The story and I'm sticking.
There you go. Thanks. Appreciate it.
All right.
So let's see what we're doing here. Now, she's always so fruitful with titles. Valerie in Warrensville has more. So, Valerie, what you got for me? Valerie. Valerie hung up. Well, she'll call back tomorrow, but she was the first one to vote. She admitted she liked The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Somebody had to. Andrew in Chicago, what's up tonight?
Hi, Raleigh.
How are you?
Pretty good. First of all,
my nominations. I can do more than one, right?
As many as you want. You know, as long as you love them, but you're embarrassed to tell people.
Well, okay, you're going to kick me off the air. You're going to, you're going to judge me.
No, well, I judge everybody. That's the whole fun of it. Remember, these are hits. That means plenty of people love them.
Wait. First of all, did any of Mrs. Miller's songs hit?
Downtown hit, absolutely. Mrs. Miller Downtown. Did you like it?
I love it.
Okay. Downtown. And she was, serious.
I listen to her all the time. Yeah. She makes me laugh.
Well, she was serious. She didn't realize that everybody around her wasn't. All right, next.
Okay, God. You Light Up My Life, Debbie Boone.
You like that? Okay.
I think it's terrible, but I...
You like it. Okay.
Yes. Okay.
There you go. That's the perfect example of what we're after here. Very good. And,
Brand new key. Run, Joey, run.
Wait a minute. Slower. So wait, I got to write Melanie. Melanie, brand new key. I didn't mind that either, actually. Okay. David Geddes, you liked Run, Joey, run. Okay. Daddy, please don't. Yeah, I thought that was going to go in a completely different direction. All right. So anyway, what else you got?
God damn. This is
now.
Muskrat Love.
Muskrat Love? The Captain and Teal. Okay, all right.
Sweet Home Alabama. I'm actually going on your list and hitting the ones that I hate it. I Sweet Caroline. Yummy, yummy, yummy.
Wait a minute. You're actually liking Sweet Caroline? Wow.
I'm sorry.
Wow. And Yummy, Yummy, Yummy you like?
I love the bubblegum pop.
Okay. Sorry. All right.
Toe Through the Tulips.
Nobody likes that. You really?
No, I genuinely like it.
You genuinely
like it? It makes me laugh.
Okay, Tiny Tim, Tiptoe Through the Tulips. All right. You're the one. We knew we'd find you somewhere.
People in my family think I'm tone deaf. I'm not. I know what bad singing is, makes me laugh. However, I've been on a Carole King binge.
Okay.
And, well, that's not the,
All right.
But, okay, and finally, Loving You.
Loving You, Minnie Riperton.
So, yesterday, when I had that playing, blaring on the radio I told you about, my two dogs were in the room, and as soon as she hit the high note, they got into a fight.
I love it. Well, the dog is the sensible one in this equation. Yes, I'm rooting for the dog. You've pretty much ended the night, Andrew. Thank you for your wonderful choices. I appreciate it. All right, shows a lot of courage and stamina there. I'm very impressed and also very surprised. But you know, again, Neil Diamond, who if we added all the Neil Diamond votes together, he would have been number one by far on the world's worst hit records. But clearly, millions of people bought these songs, so somebody did like them. All right, we'll get to James on the South Side tomorrow. He gave me 9 million stories, and they're all good and or bad, depending on how you look at that. Stacy from Algonquin, I believe that it is moving day tomorrow. So Stacy, good luck on the move. Call me after you're settled in the new digs. And on that note, we thank Adam for keeping us on the air, and we thank John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. So full show tomorrow night starting at 10 Central, and also on Thursday night starting at 10 Central. So if you didn't make it in tonight, there'll be plenty of room for you tomorrow night, and I'm looking forward to it. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.